First, before I do my introduction, I gotta thank those people who helped make this whole event possible, helped sponsor it. So I'd like to thank, this is old Perry, myself, Perry, Mr. and Mrs. Alan Hirsch. I want to thank Rabbi and Mrs. Yaakov May, Dr. and Mrs. Arthur Rosenbaum, Dr. and Mrs. Henry Nagy, Mr. and Mrs. Harvey Growler, Mr. and Mrs. Heshy Glatter. And we'd like to thank all those who have contributed. Rhoda also contributed. Right, I heard that. Rhoda and this thing, right. And we would like to contribute, and all those that would like to contribute, we would appreciate it. And Heshy and Susan will be collecting letters about it later on, that if you'd like to make a contribution, the congregation, but make it out the congregation in Israel, and it will be our pleasure, Baruch Hashem, to have such a schus, to have such a beautiful island coming together to hear the Rav. First of all, it's truly our privilege to have with us a premier, Talmud Chacham, a world-renowned historian and a popular national and international lecturer, Rabbi Aaron Rakefet. Rabbi Rakefet made Aliyah in 1969, leaving a prestigious position as a shul rav and a Rosh Yeshiva in Yeshiva University. He has authored a number of well-received books, such as The Silver Era, on the life and times of Rabbi Eliezer Silver, Rabbi Dr. Dov Revel, Builder of American Jewry, and the biography of the Rav, which is, I think, two volumes, if I'm not mistaken, Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik Zichrono Livracha. He has produced over 1,000 tapes listened by Jews around the world. Our Chazal teach us, Mitalmida Yosef Mikulam, that a person learns and gains from one's students. He is a proud mechanech and mentor to over 20,000 students over these many years. He has taught and presented fascinating and informative shiurim throughout his years of teaching. After making Aliyah, he was among the founders and senior Rosh Yeshiva of BMT, which was one of the first yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael devoted to teach students of Chutz La'aretz. He expanded his horizons teaching in Mechon Gold, Mechlala, and Medreshet Moriah. He now teaches in the Grus Kollel in Yerushalayim. He worked for the Mossad in Russia, teaching and giving chizuk to the refuseniks and giving them lessons and bringing them closer to Yiddishkeit. In his new book, as a matter of fact, he relates many inspiring stories of his stay in Russia. Rabbi Rakefet's years of research have made him a foremost historian of the development of Torah Judaism in the last two centuries. As an eyewitness to the Israeli scene, he has the pulse of the Israeli society. He feels it, and he understands it, and he sees it in his viewpoint. And therefore, it's truly a pleasure, and it's an honor for us to have Rabbi Rakefet here to be with us and to give us his Divrei Chachma and his tremendous words of wisdom. Thank you so much.
A book launch. Rabbi Rakefet wrote a book, a memoir, over 500 pages, and there will be a book launch downstairs. There will be Byram after the speech, and then a book launch with Kodeshin, and Rabbi Rakefet will be signing autographs. I'd like to let you know that Rabbi Rakefet will explain the books were supposed to come. I guess things are not, you know, not only bad like in Israel, since fascists happen, they happen here in America too. And books were supposed to come, and they may be on the boat, or they may be at the Navy Yard. He still hasn't received a record, Kevin hasn't received an answer yet. So what we decided to do was we have labels, like transparent labels. There are also like flyers from the OU. You fill out, you can go on the OU website and make an order of any books that you want. And the price will be the same as if you had bought it over here. Shipping will be free, and there'll be clear autograph, clear labels, which Rabbi Rakefet will autograph. And then when you get the book, you can just paste it on the front page, and it's as if you autographed.
Thank you.
I'm suffering from a cold, so you have to bear with me. This was supposed to be a book launch, so it's a book launch without books. And there's no one to blame. The original printing sold out in Israel within 48 hours. 1,000 copies were gone. 600 were put on a boat to America. And the OU is not sure whether the boat has docked yet or it's in customs, but one day it will arrive. The topic I've chosen, I was asked to speak about the Israeli scene, the religious scene. I want to tie it together with the book because this is one of the themes that comes across in this copy. Let me begin with a story which I want to analyze. Yom HaTzmut, we were invited to Beit Shemesh, a Talmud of mine. He was my Talmud, his sons, Rabbanim, are my Talmudim. And the Rabbi Dr. Herbert Cohen and Merrill had just come in Aliyah after many decades of chinuch in the United States. And they invited Malka and myself for Yom HaTzmut Sukkah. And we went to Beit Shemesh. And here we are celebrating, rejoicing. It's a wonderful holiday. And down the block are Ethiopians. And we hear their sukkah. And we hear them singing African songs. We can hear the tempo, the African beat. And we found it very fascinating. And thank God I was able to say Divrei Torah on what was happening. Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik constantly asked a very simple question. I'm a Litvak, but I always get punished when I daven at a non-Hasidic Svadish Aminyan for Mincha. Once again, I'm chayt. I don't know how people have so much time to do sins. I know from the time I finish Shachris to the time I daven Mincha, even if I wanted to sin, it's impossible. But nevertheless, we have the chutzpah to say in the vidui, aval anachnu aval teinu chatanu. We and our fathers sin. What chutzpah? We're embarrassing our parents, embarrassing our father, our mother, our forebears sinned. Chutzpah. And the Rebbe answered this so beautifully. There's a Yerushalmi in Yuma, Perek Aleph, what we call Halacha, people refer to it differently, but I was raised Perek Aleph, Halacha Aleph, subdivision Aleph. Kol dor she'eino nivnem beit hamikdash b'yomav, ma'alev alav hakatov ke'ilu v'machrimo. That the generation in which the Beit HaMikdash is not rebuilt, it's as if you destroyed it. Well, if that's the case, we all understand we have no Beit HaMikdash. I believe we're fasting next week. And we're not revealing any secrets. Our forebears sinned. They didn't succeed in rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash. And we all understand something's happening. It just is beyond words, beyond comprehension. This year we were hit without any aliyah, not counting the aliyah, but just with the rate of natural growth. We will hit 6 million Jews, halachic Jews, alat matakovash. Not only that, you all know when you come to Israel, walk the streets of Jerusalem, how many different languages you hear. In my neighborhood today, it seems anyone under 21 is not speaking Hebrew. It's like desecration of airspace if a person 21 or older speaks Hebrew. English, French, German, Amharic, Russian. What an ingathering of exiles. So many different countries. so many different cultures. Now the B'nai Menashe, I understand the government made a decision finally to bring another few hundred B'nai Menashe to Eretz Yisrael. Wow. And there's an amazing Gemara. Gemara Sachim Daf Pechet on the Aleph. The Gemara that has so much depth. And the Gemara makes a very seemingly innocent statement. Gadol kibitz galya ki yom shenidru udo shamayim va'aretz shenema quoting Hosea parabet pasabet v'nikbitzu b'nei Yisrael u'b'nei Yehuda yachdav v'samo lechem rosh echad v'yalu min ha'aretz ki gadol yom Yisrael. And the Gemara here says that the day that God gathers the Jews together is as great as the day He created the heavens and the earth. And what's amazing here, quoting that pasuk from Hosea, that B'nai Yehuda, B'nai Yisrael, Jews will join together, that itself is a miracle, that there'll be unity. But look at the word the prophet uses, Gadol Yom Yisrael. It's another name for the Jewish people, but it's not Yisrael. It's from the word Zera, a fruit, a plant, a grain, a seed. And I'd like to explain that word. And by explaining that word, we can understand who we are, what our struggles are, what our difficulties are, what the challenges are, how can we rebuild that basic. I base my thoughts to a certain degree upon the Mashar, but like every Dashan, following the example of my Rebbe, Kaniti Al Yedei Shinui. I've gone a little bit further than the Mashar. What does it mean, Yisrael, Zera? What's a seed? Every seed grows in the ground. Every country is different, every climate is different. A seed absorbs. Go to Russia. What do you have in Russia? Climate is cold. Potatoes. Beets. When I grew up, I thought that was Jewish food because that's what my grandparents ate. When Malka and I spent endless weeks behind the Iron Curtain, we learned that that's all there is in Russia. United States, go to California, go to Florida, warm climate, go to Israel, different vegetation, different plants, different fruits. I don't have to tell you, go to Machne Yehuda. You don't have a Machne Yehuda in New York. You can't possibly have it because the climate will not lend itself to it. I know with Russian Jews, when they finally got out and I would take them to Machne Yehuda for the first time, they would make a shechiyon of a shameful mouth, but they couldn't believe what they were seeing. The vegetables, the fruits, so much, so beautiful, so good. But you see, a Jew is like a vegetable. He's like a fruit. Wherever we live, we absorb from the surroundings. When we went into exile, it's not just that we left Eretz Yisrael. It's that we left Eretz Yisrael and we went to 120 different countries and were confronted and challenged by 120 different cultures. And on the simplest level, tell you a little story that made the Israeli news. You all know that Iran, formerly Persia, is not a great friend of the Jewish people today. And suddenly, on a near Pesach, on a balcony in Tel Aviv, is an Iranian flag. They called the police. Police came to investigate. It was an Iranian Jew who had come to Israel as a teenager. He was rooting for his hometown soccer team that was in the finals. And he put up an Iranian flag. Can anyone tell me why I have a student insist that I learn how to turn a computer on? It's 3 years ago. Rabbi Demi Tomi Dayo Temi Kulam. I have to stand up for him. He taught me the trick of Beetle Torah, the ability to turn a computer on. So I limit myself to 15 minutes of them. But the first website I touch, the New York Yankees. And in this book, there's a whole discourse on why Gedolei Yisrael, and I exclude myself from that august topic, but I know Gedolei Yisrael, Rabbi Lichtenstein, is the only person left alive who can give you the starting lineup of the 1945 Chicago Cubs. He was in Chicago as a kid, and it was the last time they were in the World Series. I have a whole excursus why Gedolei Yisrael left baseball, and I challenge anyone to prove me wrong. You'll see. Challenge is strong. But you absorb. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings you back to Israel. He has to recreate you. And in recreating you, it's like creating the world. That's the pshat and the Gemara so beautifully. Gadol Yom Kibbutz Galiat Ki Yom Briyat Shemayim HaKadosh. The world was created. Yesh Mayayim. Starting from scratch. A new ex nihilo. We come back, Yankee fans, soccer fans, Persian clubs, soccer, English, soccer. Chief Rabbi Lau could give you every starting lineup out of the 1960s. I understand he was learning Torah and Hebron, but I imagine there were some moments in the day when he also looked at whatever the website was then. And you have to forge your people. And now you come back to Beit Shemesh. There we are, sitting in Beit Shemesh, Americans speaking English. Herbie and myself, my dear Talmud, raised in the Bronx. Right around the corner, there are Ethiopians celebrating Yom HaTzmut. With the songs they know, the tunes they know, the joyous expressions they know. African, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, will be a new fruit, a new vegetable, an Israeli fruit, an Israeli vegetable. And this is one of the greatest challenges we face as the Kibbutz Golem unfolds. And let me come to a problem that certainly occupies the minds of everyone here. The so-called Haredi world, and I have to be very careful here because what you call Haredi in America, in Israel would be dismissed as apikarsim. Yeah, pardon me, but I have to be honest. I know what's going on. I still have my American roots partially planted here. And Baruch Hashem, very well planted in Yerushalayim HaKodesh. But you take the Haredi world, and you take modernity. What happened with Mendelssohn? And never forget who Mendelssohn was. If someone told you Mendelssohn was an apikaris, an oiswaf, a bum, a trumpet, a bushtak, whoever told you that suit against you. Rav Moshe Mendelssohn was the great-grandson of Rav Moshe Isserles of the Ramah. He was named for the Ramah. And he died a religious Jew. We have letters from Mendelssohn writing to the most famous Gentiles of his period, where he writes, I quote, you can read this in Altman's major work on Mendelssohn, Alexander Altman, who himself was a product of the Guggenheim Seminary. And Mendelssohn writes, I have to break off now because the Sabbath is approaching. I can no longer write. I have to get ready. He writes to one famous Gentile, if you're in my neighborhood when you visit Berlin, come to visit me. The Sabbath is approaching. I cannot travel to visit you, but you're able to come to see me. And then we see with Mendelssohn's children, out of the surviving children, 50% converted away after his death. Grandchildren, it is said, one grandchild died Jewish. Great-grandchildren, nobody left. In the first consular delegation to arrive from Germany after reparations, and when they opened recognition of each other, Germany and the little state of Israel, so the educational attaché to the delegation was a fine German who was not a Nazi. This rule would not allow anyone in from Germany who was identified with the Nazis. They checked. And his Israeli counterpart, Kressel, looked at his last name and said to him, you're a grandson. And he said, yes, I am a grandson of Moshe Mendelssohn, a German Protestant, as we would say, a WASP. This is what happened to the Jew outside of Israel. The first rabbi in America, Gershom Mendes Seixas, right or wrong, Spanish-Portuguese synagogue, Civil War, 1700s. When I was growing up, the first ranked tennis player in the United States, knew anyone my age, remember the name? Victor Seixas. A pure wasp to the fourth power. Yes, he remembered that he's seven generations removed from the first rabbi, proud of it, the Mayflower, revolutionary period. That was the extent of his identity with his people. So the Haredi world took on a different stance. Build a fence around yourself, the bigger the better. I need not tell you, you look at the Hasidic world, and as a Litvak, it hurts me to admit the truth, the Hasidim have conquered the Litvish world today, particularly in the United States. In Israel, it's a little different because you have different worlds of real committed Jews, Chazalim, Haredim, Dabim, Mimim, Haredim. Chassidus hasn't conquered all, or when it conquers, the religious Zionist world, it's with the religious Zionists too. But in America, Chassidus has conquered the world. And what's so powerful and so attractive about Chassidus? It's a wall around you. You walk with that wall. You dress differently. Black, white, a different type of hat, a beard, payas. No Gentile can mistake you for not being who you are. And that becomes very potent. Chassidim use the term enash, anshei shlomeinu. And if you're a chassid, you hear that term, Chassidim who don't know each other. In a minute, all barriers fall, and the friendship overwhelms. And not particularly if there happen to be two Lubavitchers, two Belzer, two Gera, two Slotima. Wow. Within seconds, they are cousins. They are related. And the Hasidic world built this up. And when the state of Israel was established, Ben-Gurion, I once spoke about this in Flatbush, so I don't want to repeat myself and go into detail, but Ben-Gurion evidently felt, give it 20, 30 years, there won't be a Haredi Jew left. Everyone will integrate. And he enabled the Haredim, don't serve in the army, go to Bnei Brak, certain parts of Yerushalayim, and have your own world where you can build a fence around yourself as you did in the Gola. The Haredi world today has tremendous success. I want to salute my student, Rabbi Irvin, who just finished a stint in the Israeli army, and I want to say to him, kol hakavod and welcome. Do me a favor, Mark, help me find the chair. Where's the chair? No, let him sit. Let him sit. He just finished the army. I guess you were bending down a lot fixing tanks, so you're used to it. The army gave him a profession. He can now work in the automotive industry. I have a grandson who, actually his grandparents live, he came from this neighborhood, and the army gave him a profession too. He was a frontline medic, and today, when he finished Hester, he's in medical school. So the army does good. Baruch Hashem. And that chair's good. Come, the people sitting on the floor, we have two chairs here. Matan, please, honor me. Thank you. And you see, the Haredi world built the fence around itself. Panovich became Hasidish. Everyone became Hasidish. Even the Sephardic world that was so influenced by the Ashkenazim, they relate to Rav Ovadia like Hasidim relate to a Rebbe. But the Haredi world, its great success has become its failure, and its failure has become its great success. And let me explain myself. Haredim numbered at one time hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands. Today you're talking about 500,000 youngsters who are getting an education where they don't even graduate what we call elementary school. A kid in Satma has to go to high school whether he likes it or not. The state requires it. A lazy kid, by the time he's 12, 13, he's learning around the clock. Doesn't have to worry about the army. And the Haredi world, today you're talking hundreds of thousands of kids, Kanaim Harder, King Yehu. And with even the fall-away rate, and we all have this problem, no one has, I've said this so many times, no one has the perfect hashgafah that every kid remains solid. If someone came up with that hashgafah, I'd be the first one to stand in line, even if it meant I had to put a strangle on. I'd be the first one to put a strangle on. But we all suffer with that problem. But even with the fall away rate, the success is unbelievable. But it becomes their failure. Because where do you get money? Look what's happening to the United States. Look where you stand today. Look how the social services have bankrupted the country. Don't have to be a big chacham to know if you spend more than you earn, you're going to go bankrupt. And all of the great social services were based upon the idea that the working people would support the retirees. But today you have less children than ever. And thank God, more retirees who live longer than ever. So in Israel, one father can support three children. One father did well, he can support 15 grandchildren. But when you're talking about 30, 40, 50, 100, who can support them? And that failure has brought us tremendous openings today. We have Haredim coming out of the ghetto, going to special programs. You've all heard of Machon Parnassa. Let me recall Rabbi Dr. Bernard Lander, Zeicher Tzadik Lebracha. He told me he couldn't call it a college in Borough Park, so he called it Machon Parnassa. In Israel today, you should see bells. Every high school kid is given guidance where to go, where to learn a trade. Many schools have sprung up. Rabbi Obadiah's daughter opened a college for Haredim. Men and women study in one building on different floors. Okay? Landa, Toro, men and women, I believe, different days there, a little bit frumer. And Machon Lev, you talk about Machon Lev, you talk about Machon Tal, their division for women. You can't believe what they're doing with Hasidish Yidden, with Yeshiva Light, with branches in B'nai Brak. The world is open. And the army, entrance to society, it's a different army today. You want proof it's a different army? You won't believe what I'm about to show you. I came with show and tell. But this course, this doesn't go for nothing. For the Rebbe's Ayel, you list 18,000 shekels, bought or not bought. What do you say, Matan? Do it. Okay. I have an imaginary IOU list based upon the Gemara, Asher, the Mugin, Megan, Mugin, Shab. Your doctor who heals for nothing is worth nothing. When a Rebbe shows off treasures, the students have to feel it. My dear friends, this august audience, you see these two little volumes, volume one, volume two. They have a name that no other sefer ever had. Halacha Bitzava. This is the result of 60 plus years of religious soldiers in the army. Every question you could imagine, with magnificent guidance for soldiers by Rav Yosef Tzvi Limon, one of the real up-and-coming Talmidei Chachamim, Poskei Halacha, a product of Yeshivat Alon Shvut. His grandfather was the famous poet and philosopher Talmud Mufak of Rav Avraham Yitzchak, a Kohen Cook. And you cannot believe what is covered in here. I bought this for my grandchildren, and it's published by Yediyat Ahronot. That's like telling you the Daily News published these two volumes. It's mind-boggling and beautifully done. And I give you a simple example, a shaila that no one here has ever thought of. You're relaxing in the army at Shabbat, and suddenly your unit is called up. There's tension on the border. Fine. What's the shaila? Batash, bitachon shel pei, ongoing security. Pikuach nefesh? No problem. But you're going to be way out there. In a few hours, it's time to make Havdalah. Can you take wine with you to make Havdalah? Hachana mekodesh l'chol, you're preparing for Shabbos, for the weekday. Soldier called up, Yom Kippur War, the Shaila came. On Yom Kippur, Shabbos, 1973. Can you take your tefillin with you? A day later you're up in the Golan Heights, a day later you're down in Sinai Peninsula. What are you going to ask, the Syrians, the Egyptians, for tefillin? Understand? These are serious shaila, she'elot, that have never been asked. But let me show you the latest innovation in the army for any soldier who requests it. What do you see here? What do you see? Okay? They'll get that soon enough too. They'll be choice. But I don't wear tefillin. I can't bring myself to wear tefillin because my Rebbe was opposed to it. So I tell the Vayu Rosh Yeshiva wear tefillin, and my Kepetz Vod is everyone accuses the Vayu Rosh Yeshiva, you know, they're not right wing enough. So if they put on tefillin, it's innocent, and they can say, see, we're right wing, we're mocked, we're putting on tefillin. But I can't do it because I heard the Rav, and it's in print, where the Rav said we have to have a Masorah. And he wouldn't go along with the Regina and all those that innovated the Tehillah. The Rav would not go along. Now this, what's happening now, and you all know Nachal Haredi is now over 10,000 soldiers have served in Nachal Haredi. Not all are Haredim, many Datiyim Le'uliyim who wanted that atmosphere. But it was the bridge that opened up the army to the Haredim. There's now a computer division that's entirely Haredim. And what does that mean? These are all graduates of Machon Lev and other institutions. And they're fabulous computer people because there seems to be a correlation between someone who can master a Daf Gemara and the ability to put it all through a computer. The army has a tremendous division which they keep on expanding. What does it mean, Haredi? No women are in that division, and all the food has double or triple or quadruple hashgacha. You've all seen Israeli products, you know what I'm talking about. The other day I picked up, you must have the rabbinut by law. The other day I picked up the Rabbanut, the Bedatz, Shevet Yisrael, and Machzikei Hadat, all on one product. Okay? Baruch Hashem, I believe it's kosher. When you have that, I believe. And you have to understand that this obligates people like us. And what do I mean by that? And I say this to my grandchildren, I say this to my students, we who have grown up in the big world, we who grew up under the ages, Torah Mada, Torah Demeritz, and you all know how many years I've devoted to dealing with Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Hirsch and Rabbi Kiyo Yaakov Weinberg and giving a lecture by Rabbi Kiyo Yaakov Lawrence to Shabbat and dealing with the conflict in culture and how to handle it. We who have successfully walked this bridge and can so beautifully lead the way in Israel with Torah and the reality of Israel today and the gathering of the exiles, we have an obligation to be an example. We have to reach out. We have to show the Haredi world there is much we can learn from them. They have an intenseness that perhaps at times we lack, although I don't have to tell you that the Chadal world, the Haredi, Daki Yumi world, has that intenseness as well. They don't miss a minyan. They don't take Torah, what I call orthodoxy light, they're makdim. We have much to learn from them, but there's much that we can lead them and show them that one can turn failure into success. We can come out of the ghetto. We can get rid of the walls we've built around ourselves in the diaspora. We can integrate into modern Israel, the Kabbalah with Tiferet, and remain the same Hasidim, the same Medakta Kingdom Mitzvah, the same Lomdei Torah, and have dignity and Panasa B'Kavah. And I have to go to the shuls in Flatbush and Borough Park, the Chasna Makana Kind, it's impossible to daven. I daven in the shul in Bnei Brak, and this morning in the middle of davening, a guy gives me a whole sheet to read. I shouldn't say Shema Yisrael. I should read his sheet about what they're doing in Jerusalem to help the poor children. We can live in dignity. We can serve in the army, which is one of the biggest mitzvot we have today. And We can be the example. We can help them walk that bridge. So let me conclude this part. And once again, let me just briefly summarize. We have to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. We have to do our share. We have to have the ingathering with the exiles. We have to bring more and more Jews to Israel. Just to mention 6 million, when Malka and I went in Aliyah, there were 1.5 million Jews in the state of Israel, and practically everyone knew everybody else. I need not tell you what the matzav is today, Baruch Hashem. Every language, every culture, but ultimately, look at the kingdom, look at the children, look at the grandchildren, look at the great-grandchildren, and you see what the Gemara is saying, that Gadol Yom Kibbutz Goliath, like the creation of Shemayim Va'aretz, a new country, a new people are coming back, taking our heritage, taking our Torah, and building it with dignity in Admat HaKodesh, the Holy Land. Gadol Yom Yisrael. Let me end off this part of the lecture. You all know that we say Kinat on Tisha B'Av. When I was growing up, the printer decided what Kinat you should say. The ones that were larger print, they said. The ones in smaller print, they skipped. Today, Baruch Hashem, it's all in one type setting, so we are finished. We can't skip, and we have to say it all. And they're beautiful kinah today, the Rabbi Soloveitchik kinah issued by the young you, the Arsko kinah, we have beautiful kinah. And then the question comes, what about the Holocaust? So you all know certain kinah have been added, and perhaps the most famous one is the one of the late Baba HaRebbe, Reb Shlomo Halberstein. And he has ends off this kinah mourning and describing what he went through, what the Holocaust was about, what he saw with his own eyes. Rachem al sheirito, habeklo min ha-shamayim, l'machanot ha-kadoshim, piyesha, ki yotzei Mitzrayim, komein beit kodshenu, v'nachmenu v'kiflayim, romameinu v'havyeinu, mitzion v'yirushalayim. And he's pleading with God, look at all that you killed. 10 times the Yotzei Mitzrayim. How many were the Yotzei Mitzrayim? 600,000. 10 times? 6 million. Have mercy on the remnant that survived and lead us to Zion and Yerushalayim. And I say to the exalted memory of the Baba the Rebbe, look what we have achieved in Israel today, that we are now, this year, 6 million, in memory of the 6 million that perished. And halavai, we should go from strength to strength, that ultimately in our lifetime yet, we should see 18 million Jews al Admat HaKodesh. Now, a few words about this volume. It's unlike my previous 6 volumes, which are pure scholarship. Revel Silver, the 2 volumes of Rakafat Aharon, a collection of public scholarship, and my 2 volumes on Moi Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. This volume is a scholarly memoir. I worked on it 11 years. It was the hardest volume I've written. But thank God the end result is very beautiful, and I have to be very makitaiga to the publishers, the OU and Geffen. I really wanted 2 volumes. They felt in the contemporary atmosphere economically it would not sell, so I had to cut out a little, and we managed, but I pleaded with them not to make the print smaller, so I have to pay homage that they made the pages larger and did not compromise on the print. And in this volume, there's everything that I was privileged to see in my lifetime. I want to call your attention, however, to some very, very special pictures. And I can tell you, it's worth buying the volume just for the pictures. You don't have to read one word of Rakefet's foolishness, but the pictures. And here, I have to thank my Talmud. I have Arya Liebman from Chabad, my dear Talmud. He was the one who told me the story and brought me to the source. Chabad had a picture from 1942 of the sixth Rebbe and his two sons-in-law, ultimately the one who would become the seventh Rebbe, sitting with a young man with a black beard. And no one knew who that young man was with the black beard. When my work on my Rebbe appeared, there was a picture of the Rebbe in my work from 1939, Chabad was able to identify that it is the Rebbe sitting with the two Rebbeim. And they gave me permission. This is the first time this particular picture has been published. And it's before computers, no one could play with it, no one could compose the picture. Take my word, friend, it's the Rav Yosef Yitzchak Yatz and Rav Menachem Mendel Schneerson, a young man with a small black beard adorning his face. Another picture, which is epic making. Let me tell you the story first. It's okay. It just says that the book is let me tell you the story. You never know how many people are listening here. So one time I was talking about the Rav in class, and I mentioned that Rebbe was over 6 foot tall when I was his Talmud in the 50s. So some rabbi listening, I thought this rabbi's children, and he wrote a review of my scholarship, and then he mentioned that he heard me say that the Rebbe is over 6 foot tall, and he says Rabbi Rakefet is wrong. I knew the Rebbe in the 70s, he was under 6 foot, but Rabbi Rakefet looked up to the Rebbe spiritually, so he thought he was physically tall. So, all right, fine. Let that be the worst criticism of my scholarship. Believe it or not, a fellow named Zamek, Mark Zamek, that's, you know the bakery Zamek? It's a grandson. So he had another grandfather, Rabbi Theodore Adams. He was furious. He said to me, Rebbe, you're absolutely right. I said, what's geit achanan level? What are you getting so upset about? We're not dealing here with a machlokes in halacha. He says, no, I have a picture to prove it. He says, how tall was my grandfather? You remember Rabbi Teddy Adams? Was a linebacker. 6'3", tall, gezun, stark. He says, I have a picture of my Zayda with the Rav and the Chaim Heller. The Rav is practically as tall as my Zayda. He sent me the picture with permission to publish it, and believe me, the Rav was over 6 feet in the 1950s. But, all right, let it be. There's another picture here that has an unbelievable story, and I'll mention a puzzle to you. When you get the book, you can see if you can work it out. When we were kids, so we went to the Rav in 57, who was giving a Yahrzeit Shiur. It was the last Yahrzeit Shiur in the Beis Medrash. After that, the police department and the fire department said it's a hazard, and they made him move into Nathan Lampert Auditorium. But in the Beis Medrash, you could get close to the Rav. And either I took the picture, a friend of mine, I think it was a group of us. It could be I took. Anyway, we took a picture of the Rav in the middle of Shir. This is the greatest picture ever taken. We captured the Rav right in the middle. And I never knew what happened to the picture. When we moved my mother, she lived really well, to assisted living a few years ago, we cleaned out the apartment. I found the picture. It is an unbelievable, you can't see it from afar, but it's an unbelievable picture. In this picture, I challenge you to find Rav Aaron Soloveitchik and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein are both in the picture of the crowd surrounding the Rav. Let me show you a light side here. You know, it's funny what happens in life. Malka and I have a big schut, obviously. I give my wife the credit because it took guts when the Mossad called me and, you know, the security clause is off today. And they permitted me, my last conversation with my handler, Aryeh Kroll, Zeker Tzadik Livracha, was what can I publish? And Aryeh barked at me, Utarecha refasem kol mashata yodeya. Anything you know, you don't know all the secrets, whatever you know, it's no security today. So, among the people we met in Russia, our first trip there in 1981, January, so the final day in Moscow, they took us way out of the city. And we said, why are we going so far out? They said, we had a special guest at the shiur today. And in walks the only prisoner of Zion who was arrested 3 different times for studying Hebrew. And his name, Yosef Bigun. And I had a particular relationship with that name because I taught his cousin in Michlala. One brother went to America and one brother remained behind in Russia. And the grandchildren, one went to prison 3 times for trying to be a Jew, and one lives in Chief Godless Hills happily ever after. Fine. So, Malka took a picture of myself studying Talmud with Yosef. When I came back to Israel, some of his Talmudim desperately wanted the picture. So I gave it to them on condition they cannot publicize it. It's a security hazard. No Israeli is supposed to be in Russia. So one individual who doesn't live far from here today, he gave it to a Haredi newspaper, and they publicized it, removing my face. So you have 2 pictures. One of me teaching Yosef, and one with my face removed. But the joker is, my grandson, who was a little kid then, I don't, it's 2, 3, when he looks at the picture, he says, Saba, that's you! So, I just want to show you 2 more pictures. There are 32 pages here, but I don't want to overly bore you. This picture is classic. I explain it in the text. It's Haftala and Leningrad. And you see 2 refusniks making Haftalah. By the way, the person making Haftalah is the only Jew in Leningrad who never was Mechalel Shabbos. Went through World War II, went through the Communist Empire, went through refusal. He, an old Chabad family, his wife was from Georgia. He's a Chabadnik in their roots, in their very inner core. And he was never Mechalel Shabbos. And here he is making Haftalah. And you notice on the table is an Israeli candle. And yet they're making Haftalah on matches. So I took this picture. But I asked him, Daniel, Dania, why don't you use the Israeli candle? What do you need matches for? And he answered an answer that I shall never forget. We can't replace the Israeli candle that was smuggled in by a tourist. But we use matches. I said, so why do you put the candle on the table? What's fakir? Is that, you know, risk of mind graft there? What's the key? You putting a candle on the table? He says, l'kasher et atzmeinu im Eretz Yisrael. To tie ourselves together with the land of Israel. You should know that this picture made a tremendous impact, and the Israeli television wanted to use it for the start of their Malacha Malka program. The Mossad wouldn't let them for fear. People would ask, how do Israelis wind up in Israel? Finally, There's one picture here which I think is the history of our people. This is Fania Fratkin, the daughter of Daniel. And one time tourists visited, they woke her up, she didn't look too happy, they took a picture of her. And that picture became a triple SJ poster. It reads, Fania Fratkin isn't laughing, neither are Russia's other 2,995,999 Jews. Let my people go. Students struggle for Soviet Germans. And your humble servant took a picture of Fratka of Fania smiling, holding up the picture in the absorption center in Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. And halavai, this picture represents us, represents Netzach, represents the saga of Am Yisrael. Thank you very, very much.
Oh, what we're going to do is there'll be for the women, they can have a collation downstairs, and we're going to David Meyerov now, and then afterwards we can go downstairs to have a collation. Yes. Okay. 1 second. Alan Hirsch, president, would like to say a few words. Shh, 1 second, please.
I'm not sure. First of all, we want to thank Perry and Garfinkel, Rabbi Garfinkel, for making this evening possible and all the work that went into it. Perry, especially.
Perry.
Go down to the collation first now. I don't know if there's room for everybody, but
okay, Chris, let the women go down.
The women go down now, don't matter. If there's anything left, the men will go down afterwards.
The whiskey is in the back. We'll leave that.
I don't think there's enough for the men and the women, so let the women go down now and let us go. Okay. Also, if anybody would like to contribute, like
the contributions,
anybody
wants to
contribute. Box over there, the contributors, anything. Again, books.